You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
And not everything I'm going to talk about today is illegal, but everything that I'm going to talk about today is bad for regular Americans.
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
I'm a geek. I'm a nerd. I'm a data wong.
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I talk about food a lot on the show. It's a thing. I am a foodie.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, we are 100 days into Trump 2.0. And while I expected it to be terrible, this is really bad. And the polls are showing large swaths of Americans, in fact, a majority of Americans, disapprove of the job that Donald Trump is doing. Here to help us make sense of it all is Tanya Bjork. She's a longtime Democratic strategist. She's worked with the Obama, Clinton, and Biden campaigns. Her dog even wants to get in on the action. And so can each and every one of you. Listen, we've been talking about the first 100 days. If you have questions or comments for Tanya and I, we'll take those. We want to get into it. 855-752-4842. Tanya, you worked with Badger Battleground Poll.
Yeah.
This was out in the field towards the end of March and early April. So we're a little bit on from the time period that your polling was out in the field. But you focused on Wisconsin. It was the first major poll to test and see what Wisconsinites think about Trump's performance so far. So let's start there. What did you see from the Badger Battleground poll results? How is Donald Trump's administration perceived by the majority of Wisconsinites today?
Yeah, well, first off, just a little note. This poll was immediately after the Supreme Court election, so it was right after. So we didn't want to do
April,
a poll
with
all that noise. I don't know if you were watching your television during, you know, the week before the Supreme Court race, but I don't think anything, you know,
no advertisements except for the campaign ads. That's
I have a 10-year-old daughter, and we couldn't even watch the news anymore because of all the ads. So, but on to the poll. So what we found is that, you know, Trump is in some pretty bad shape. Some key takeaways. I'll start with that. The poll was good news for Democrats. We definitely have the advantage right now. And I think even some recent polling that some NBC polling that was even today, it's actually, everything I'm saying right now is actually now even a little bit better, 3 weeks into it. So, only 41% of people think that the country is on the right track. People really think that the economy is tough right now, and it's likely to get worse. I think people are really starting to absorb what the tariffs really mean, and the fact that, you know, what Donald Trump said about bringing costs down on day one is not only not working, but things are getting a little bit worse.
Let me just ask you a question about this, because this has been one of the I just don't have the answer for. Legitimately, every single economist or policy analyst, and including some CEOs that were willing to speak on the record before the November election, said over and over and over and over and over again that this kind of approach to tariffs will make everything more expensive for middle-class Americans. And yet I heard this story from a good friend of mine, a coworker, exclaimed, "I'm waiting until January 21st to fill up my tank of gas and to go buy groceries because everything will be cheaper on January 21st. And nothing is cheaper than was before Donald Trump was sworn in on January 20th. Why has it taken people so long to see the truth? And we haven't even hit the pain point yet. Like, that is coming in late May. This is still just people talking about it.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you think you're frustrated by that, by voters not understanding what all that means, imagine how somebody like me is frustrated with that when we spend literally hundreds of millions of dollars to, you know, on the presidential campaign, trying to, you know, sort of tell people that, and to have people just say, no, don't think it, don't believe it. It is really frustrating. And that's not always the case when it comes to politics and to campaigns. But there's something about Donald Trump that, you know, a lot of, you know, his supporters just, facts and truth oftentimes don't matter. And that's a really frustrating place to be. But I couldn't agree with you more. There's lots of people that I talk to and in some focus groups and such, they just, you know, and you can, it could be the Wall Street Journal, which is seen as a conservative and, you know, a financial paper. That could be the Wall Street Journal saying it. And people are like, that's not what I think. So
it's funny that you mentioned that, Tanya, because I started today talking about the Wall Street Journal's op-ed page today, evaluating Donald Trump's first 100 days, and basically saying he's headed for near catastrophe if he continues with this tariff garbage. And oh, by the way, his foreign policy has completely disrupted the global order and probably put a match to the trillions and trillions of dollars the United States has spent over the last 80 years trying to solidify what is, in effect, the anti-Nazi Western alliance. And he just blew that up in a day because, you know, whatever, Zelensky didn't wear a suit in the Oval Office. But I digress.
Yeah.
The Wall Street Journal today doing exactly what you're describing. So we talked about the fact that Wisconsinites very pessimistic on the economic policy of the president. What about things like the border and the deportations?
You know, we didn't spend a lot of time on, we did ask a question about the border and deportations, but this, again, this was before sort of some of the bigger deportation, you know, issues, I'll call them, have arisen. So, you know, I think people are largely split on party lines when it comes to the border, whereas, you know, Republicans and the more conservative Republicans sort of tend to like what he's doing, and Democrats don't like what he's doing, and independents are sort of split a little bit. But I do think that some of this recent deportation issues, let's just call them, that have arisen, like deporting, you know, 2-year-old children and other toddlers and, you know, and not prioritizing, you know, and some of the, what they said they were going to do, which is go after people that have, you know, criminal records and such. But what we're seeing is that there's a lot, the web or the net has gotten a lot bigger. And I think it's going to be a problem for them there, you know, and maybe finally, this might be, you know, kind of what, you know, Republicans always have the advantage on things like border security. And that might be slipping with all these mistakes and missteps that they're making.
So I want to ask you two completely different questions, but they're both related to these security issues. One is, all right, we're both wonks. We both care about this a ton. How important is the prosecution of Hannah Dugin? Like, this to me was a political misstep, right? If you're Trump, because you push all in, unless you convict this woman on something substantial, it's going to look like, yeah, you're a renegade, lawless, you know, what are you doing? This isn't helping anything. So that's question one. Question two is there a pathway where Democrats, while we were talking about due process and the lawlessness of the Trump administration and the constitutional crisis, also just change all of that and say, yeah, here's how we're going to secure the border, and start talking about it in an affirmative way when it comes to border security? So is the Hannah Dugin prosecution a potential blow up for the Trump administration? And secondly, is there a flipping of the script that Democrats could engage to go stronger on border security and potentially take this issue back from Republicans?
Well, I think on the judge thing, you know, this will not be, you know, I would guess that what'll end up happening is they will somehow not be able to actually prosecute, or the prosecution won't turn out their way. And that won't be unlike many of the other things that Donald Trump does. He does them, and then without, sort of recklessly, and without caring about sort of what the facts are, and his base loves it. And then when it doesn't work out his way, he just simply says, those are Democrat judges, those are, you know, and sort of blames the process, the system. And his supporters tend to nod their heads and say, yeah, what she did was wrong, but it's not, you know, she got off because of the, you know, the Democrat prosecutors in Milwaukee didn't do their jobs or whatever it is. So I think that's a pretty typical thing that Donald Trump does. It's sort of like this, you know, UW-Madison, they revoking all the student visas, just does it, announces it, you know, does a victory lap, and his supporters love it. And then, you know, 3 weeks later or whatever it was, you know, rescinds them or, you know, rescinds the revocation, which is a double negative.
Yeah, rescinding, you know the rescinding. Yeah. Well,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and then he, you know, and then he just doesn't talk about it. It's like it never happened, you know, so it's a difficult thing. And, you know, it's not what presidents do. Let's put it that way, except for this president. I mean, normally,
no, it's what
as
petulant,
you know,
spoiled brat children do when
yeah,
they don't
normally,
get their way.
As you know, when the White House does something, it is very carefully thought out. It is very, you know, and it's, you know, and this just, you know, surprise, surprise, this is not the case with this current White House.
So let me turn to that second. Yeah, that second question. Can Dems retake this issue? What I've been saying a lot of is, listen, we're America. We should be able to do process and secure our border. Like we can do process and deport where that's appropriate. Is there an opportunity for Dems here,
yeah,
Tanya?
Yeah, I mean, I do, but I don't, what, no matter what we say, voters don't trust Democrats as much on voter security as they do Republicans. But I think that that's gonna change a bit. And I do think that we as Democrats can say exactly what you said, which is, you know, there ought to be a path to citizenship. We ought to protect the DACA families, which are people who, you know, who were brought here when they were very young and because their parents came. And, you know, but they lived here their whole lives and all of that. There ought to be a quick pathway to citizenship for them. But certainly we need to have more border security as well. And Democrats have been saying that over the years. That's not something like we don't say, screw the border. Who cares? That's not what the stance is. It's just it's sort of not our strong suit. And so we tend not to talk about it as much. And that's probably going to have to change if we're going to have to, you know, sort of fight, you know, on that issue. I think we're going to have to change that a little bit. And I think we can.
I think we can too, and we must, right?
Yeah.
And the how of that is what matters to me, right? Because it seems to me Dems have struggled mightily to break through some of the messaging. And listen, I'll chalk up a huge swath of the MAGA base as like, ain't ever going to get them, not going to reach them, don't care what the facts are. Like, that's lost cause territory. But there's more people that stayed home in November than there were that voted for Donald Trump. That's the group of people that I'm like, hey, does reality matter? Is this getting through, right? How are those people reacting?
Yeah. And, you know, one other thing I would just say about this issue too is I think we as Democrats tend to operate in good faith. And so when the immigration bill, you know, when was that? 4, 3 years ago, when there was a compromise and it was a Democrat-Republican compromise and they were about ready to pass it. And Donald Trump said, are you guys kidding me? Don't do that. It'll take this will take that issue away.
I can't run on it.
I can't run on it. And so, you know, we really thought we operated in good faith. We, you know, negotiated with the Republicans and negotiated with people that we don't see eye to eye with at all, especially on this issue. And, you know, then he knew that if that bill passed, that issue would be largely taken off the table.
So this is where I want to start when we come back with Tanya Bork, a longtime Dem strategist here in Wisconsin. How do Democrats navigate, given that we seem to get punished for operating in good faith and telling the truth? What's next for the Democratic Party, especially here in Wisconsin? How much does the chair matter? You're not going to want to go away. That election's coming up in June. The discussion is coming up just after these important messages. My name's Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's not a white-winged dove. It's Tanya Bork. She is a longtime Democratic strategist here in Wisconsin. We're talking about some of the polling that we've all been digesting over the last few days, assessing Donald Trump's effectiveness 100 days in. Most notably, you know, this morning I took a look at the NPR PBS News Marist poll that just came out. It was in the field April 21st through April 23rd. 45% of respondents, 45% give Donald Trump an F. That is just incredible. And 45% versus 23% as an A, 17% as a B, and then the rest is sort of rounding error. Tanya, I wanted to get back to this point that this has bugged me for decades. And I have never, like, gee whiz, I would be a very, 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 very wealthy political consultant if I knew the one answer to this question. But Democrats tell the truth, right?
To a fault.
And yes, is there rhetoric employed? Are there exaggerations? Sure. Have individual Democrats lied? Sure. But on balance, the Democratic Party has largely sought to tell their constituents and voters the truth, even when it's painful, even when it's complicated, right? Yeah. That's always, it's the Dems and the messaging. Why can't we get the messaging right? And it's like, well, sometimes I think people are psychologically primed in certain ways to reject information. But my real question to you is, Dems try to tell the truth. I don't know that we always get the message exactly right. We try to operate, I think, observably and objectively in good faith. We get punished for this, it seems, in certain election cycles, especially when we have an incumbent in the White House many times, right? It's in those midterm cycles. What's going on here? Why is it that Republicans seemingly can get away with the most flagrant and abhorrent lies cycle after cycle, and their voting base doesn't seem to care?
Well, that's actually, that's a really good point, that their voting base doesn't seem to care. Our voting base does care, which is part of the reason why, you know, we don't do that. But it is really hard for Democrats to say, you know, not only to not tell the truth, but to say one thing and do another, or to say one thing when it's politically expedient in one election cycle, and then completely to say something different when it's politically expedient in another election cycle. And you know, I would say that does sometimes, I guess, cause a problem with voters, but it's also authentic. And, you know, I don't think it's something that you're going to see us change. We don't like to be hypocrites. And, you know, maybe we should not care about that as much, but we do. And the other thing about messaging, I mean, I think that there is a lot of work that that we as Democrats need to do to kind of break through more. I think some of the ways that we communicate need to be updated and refined, and we need to start talking to people more about where, you know, where they are and where they get their news. And we do a little bit of that, you know, but we need to do a lot more of it.
Can I ask you a related question, Tanya? And this, again, this has turned into a, like, Maggie's missives on things that have bothered me about political communications over the last 25 years. But I think a lot of our base has some of these questions from time to time. And I'm going to be really blunt at this. Mm-hmm. What are state parties, and I'll speak specifically about the state Democratic Party here, doing about Democratic pipeline and the vetting of candidates? I think one of the things that turns regular people off is we've got folks that sound like politicians. Nobody wants to listen to a stinking politician. I don't want to listen to them. As soon as it sounds like they're reading me talking points, it's like, interview over, I'm done.
Yeah.
That's not helpful to me as a voter. I think people stop listening. What are we doing about our pipeline and trying to ensure that the candidates that we're putting out there are allowed to be themselves, they're not overmanaged, and that we're promoting people that do have an authentic voice?
Well, I'll just say one thing about that. I'll say, if we don't, we can't, you know, this is probably not what I should say, but I'm going to say it anyways.
Oh, good. You know. Say it anyways. We're on live radio. I mean, go for it.
To some extent, candidates do need to be managed a little bit. It doesn't mean that they should be inauthentic, though. That's That is the real crux of what we need to be doing. We also need to be working harder to find candidates that match their district. Now, that's going to get a lot easier now that we have new maps. I will tell you, as somebody, one of my jobs in previous years was working for Emily's List, and my job was to recruit women candidates to run for office, and mostly for local office. And it is really hard to recruit a really good candidate that fits the district. Maybe it's a teacher or a nurse, or you know, when they sort of feel like the numbers are already stacked against them before they even put their name on the ballot. And with, you know, all of the money that needs to be raised and all of that stuff, you know, it is really hard. It's not that we don't try, right? But oftentimes our really the best candidates that we can try to recruit are people who say, I'm a nurse, I'm a mom, I got soccer. You know, it's really hard to find find candidates that fit the district. And then they have to, not only do they fit the district, they have to be good on camera. They got to be good at an interview. They've got to be good on the phone raising money. And it is a lot to ask. And it's especially a lot to ask if, you know, in previous cycles when we've got legislative districts that are already slotted against them. So
right.
When you go to recruit a candidate and you say, you know, this is a, you know,
you're 42%, gonna lose.
Yeah. a 42% Democratic district. How about it? Let's try to get to 45. It's not that appealing, but that is going to get better. And I also think that we have a bigger bench than we've had before, and we've got a lot more enthusiasm than we've had before. And that will help us to recruit good candidates that are authentic and fit their district, and hopefully can stay on message.
That is the key. Authenticity. Reflecting your district and staying on message, but not sounding like you're staying
exactly.
on message.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tanya Bjork, longtime Democratic strategist. When we come back, it's the State Slate with Dan Schaefer, creator of the Recombobulation, our political editor here at Civic Media. We're going to talk about some breaking news just moments ago in Hannah Dugan's prosecution. Ooh. Don't go anywhere. My name is Maggie Dawn. We'll be right back here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. Hope you're having a fine Tuesday afternoon. I've got a great guest to help us close out the show this half hour. His name's Dan Schaefer. He's the creation of the famous Recombobulation Area. You can find that on Substack. You can also find his great work at civicmedia.us. He is my colleague here, as he is our political editor. Dan, great to have you on. This is going to be your new slot. Really excited to make sure that everybody driving home from work gets the benefit of all of your expertise, Dan. And you helped me know about some breaking news just within the last half hour that relates to Judge Dugan's case. I want to start with the breaking news. Then we're going to zoom out, because you and I have yet to have a chance to talk about this on the air and what it all means for Wisconsin, but share with us the breaking news.
Yeah, lots going on. Glad to be with you here on the Maggie Dawn Show in drive time now.
Very excited
to be joining you here. But the news from just within the last half hour here, the Wisconsin Supreme Court has issued a release that they are temporarily prohibiting Milwaukee County Judge Hannah Dugan from exercising the powers of a circuit court judge after the FBI arrested her last week. So already earlier this week, as we reported at Civic Media, a reserve judge has already been handling Judge Dugan's cases since Monday. But this is, it seems like, you know, and I'll defer to you here with the legal expertise, Maggie Dawn, but this seems like as much of a formality as anything. Am I reading this correctly here?
So here is the thing, and I was fortunate enough to be able to attend Mr. David Crowley, Milwaukee County Executive, his press conference on Friday. And at that press conference, I asked him a question relating to this. I assumed that she would not be hearing cases while she's facing these criminal trials. But to me, the money question, if you will, and pun intended here, is does she continue to draw a salary? In other words, is this an administrative suspension, not a full suspension? And why is this so important? Well, hey, folks, if you can imagine the entire apparatus of the federal government, you know, catalyzed over xenophobia, racism, and hatred with a president that doesn't care anything about constitutional norms or due process, training all of the resources of the federal government at you to prosecute you for something that you insist you are innocent of, it might matter whether or not you can continue to draw a salary while you're paying for the lawyers to defend you from this. And trust me, we learned today that Hannah has hired Paul Clement, former Solicitor General, one of the nation's premier, if not the premier, Supreme Court litigator, often referred to as the LeBron James of all lawyers. She's got U.S. Attorney, former U.S. Attorney Stephen Biskupic on her team, as well as three premier local Milwaukee-based criminal defense litigator. Yeah, folks, you're counting at least five lawyers, plus all the assistants that support them. Those are big, huge dollars. So whether or not Judge Dugan continues to draw a salary will be critical here, especially because if she doesn't, what message does that send to other judges? It makes the scariness of it, right, the intimidation factor, explode exponentially, right? If you're going to lose your salary, your means of sustaining yourself while you are targeted by the federal government, not all of us have, you know, billionaire pocketbooks like Donald Trump did, and not all of us can extort hundreds of millions of dollars in free legal services. So I think that's the real question here, Dan. Let me ask you, I'm so close to this because I know Judge Dugan personally. I know the acting U.S. attorney whose office is going to be forced to prosecute her, Rick Froehling. I consider them both friends. I know each of the lawyers that she's hired, except for Paul Clement personally. I'm too close to it. Dan, what do you think, in your mind, your reactions and the statewide reactions to Judge Dugan's arrest and prosecution?
Yeah, I mean, obviously this became a national story immediately. We had, you know, the FBI director, Kash Patel, tweeting out that picture with Dugan being arrested, all the faces of the FBI agents blurred out in the image. So it just does seem like we've reached a certain threshold with Trump's push, you know, march towards authoritarianism. And it does seem like this is, you know, yet another significant marker along there. And it does seem like most people have recognized that things are escalating in the Trump administration's push for mass deportation. You know, there was some budget language about how they're going to pay for all of this that was put out this week. And it just seems like, you know, from immigration attorneys that I've talked to, who I've had on the air and civic media and whatnot, it just seems like things are reaching another level here. And the arrest of a judge seems like a very significant flashpoint in the ongoing story that is what the Trump administration is doing here. And I think, you know, it is incumbent on all of us to, you know, just remind people that, you know, what their rights are, what the due process actually should be, what the Constitution says on these things, as, you know, the Trump administration in a perfectly Trumpian paradox is seemingly breaking a lot of laws as it purports to be the party of law and order.
I'm glad you brought that up, Dan, because the hypocrisy or the paradox here needs to be emphasized. You cannot be the party of law and order when you pardon people who beat the crap out of cops and you have evidence on video of same. You cannot be the party of law and order when you rip the Constitution to shreds. Every single society on the planet has always faced the question of what rights are we willing to sacrifice in order to feel safe. That is literally an exchange, the budding of two values, individual rights and our personal freedoms and our autonomy as individuals. Those rights will always and have always abutted the desire for safety. And it seems to me that this false choice, you can either be safe or we can live in a free-thinking democracy, that Donald Trump is saying that's simply not possible. And a lot of millions of people are buying that argument. It's going to be a fascinating one to watch, especially because the lawyers, I started the show talking about those lawyers, these are Republican-appointed lawyers. Paul Clement served as SG under G.W. Bush. Stephen Biskupic was a Republican-appointed attorney, U.S. attorney. These guys are conservatives, and they are respected throughout the conservative and Republican movements. So the fact that she's lawyered up with these guys, it's kind of like, now we're going to hire your own lawyers to tell you how terrible this prosecution is.
And I believe such was also the case for the judge who said that the Trump administration needed to return Kilmer Abrego Garcia when they sent him to the prison in El Salvador as well. So it's not like there are these super woke liberal justices that are ruling on this. It is like old school, traditional Republican rule of law, due process guys.
Correct.
So I think that is a huge.
It is literally like the white Republican guys that have always been on the inside of it. That's Harvey Wilkinson III is the judge that you're referring to. This guy is, you know, he was roommates with Brett Kavanaugh in law school, for crying out loud. I mean, like, not to put too fine a point on it. And I think Jacob Calvin, we've got some sound of Donald Trump today at a rally talking about these conservative judges, these conservative lawyers, as well as painting with quite a broad brush. I'm going to just say this before we run the sound here. What you're about to hear is what a fascist says. Let's take a listen.
And we're here tonight in the heartland of our nation to celebrate the most successful.
Not this one, Jacob. I was looking for the clip of Trump where he talks about the handful of judges. Do we have that particular sound? I'm gonna get to Donald Trump's recharacterization of the polls. We do not have that sound. Is that correct? Looks like it's popping up. I'm just going to read it. We'll see if we've got it a little bit. I don't want to waste any more time. It says this. Here's what Donald Trump said today. Quote, "We cannot allow a handful of communist radical left judges to obstruct the enforcement of our laws and assume the duties that belong solely to the president." Assume the duties that belong solely to the president? What is this man even talking about? He goes on, judges are trying to take away the power given to the president. No, you jerk. They're trying to do and exercise the authorities that the Constitution granted to them and not to the president. It's pretty bananas.
Did he just try to delete checks and balances in the middle of a speech in Michigan? Yeah, I don't know exactly what.
Yeah, he's like those other branches of the government. Yeah, you guys Congress has effectively deleted itself, or at least the MAGA movement at Congress deleted itself.
Sure,
yeah. But yeah, he's like, the judiciary, you just need to rubber stamp everything that I do, like my good friends on the Supreme Court have done thus far. We've got a little bit more breaking news today. The Evers administration announcing a lawsuit. Tell us about it, Dan.
Yeah, so this has been a story that's been going on today. So there was a story in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel this morning about DOGE making significant cuts to AmeriCorps, ending work for 430 people in Wisconsin. This is affecting millions in grants and activity going on around the state. There's been a lot of statements from, you know, various local leaders, state and local leaders across Wisconsin in response to this. And along with that, Wisconsin, led by Tony Evers and Attorney General Josh Call, are joining a multi-state lawsuit that is going against those sweeping cuts to AmeriCorps and you know, really trying to take action going against this. The Washington Post reported last week that close to $400 million in grants from AmeriCorps were being essentially canceled by Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency. So it is, you know, these are grants that are going to, you know, really critical work across the state and a variety of things, and people working in Wisconsin on issues like literacy and conservation, homelessness, healthcare. I saw the mayor of Green Bay mention a lot of the conservation work that has been done in their city in recent years has been through AmeriCorps. I know a lot of people who are, you know, kind of AmeriCorps veterans. AmeriCorps, you know, have that experience, and so many people talk about it as a really valuable thing in their career, not only in their career, but the ability to, you know, just provide service, you know, acts of service in our government.
Do we have a tally of what litigation the Evers administration, like a list of what litigation Call and the Evers administration is preparing, because I would be very interested in where are they putting their markers down, right? Because if you think about, for example, I support AmeriCorps. It's an incredible program. My dad worked in a precursor AmeriCorps program called VISTA, serving people in the Appalachian region. Of course I care about those things, but when I think about, you know, like the handful of Trumpian policies and executive orders that could dismantle the Wisconsin economy and lead to even ever increasing brain drain, which is already a challenge, it was things like, again, targeting students on visas. It's dismantling the research infrastructure that allows the University of Wisconsin continue to be one of the world's premier research institutions, and certainly in this country, those kinds of things. Dan, maybe you and I can pick up this conversation with a little reflection on what lawsuits do we have coming from the Evers and Call administrations? Maybe we'll start there next week. You're going to be able to find Dan Schaefer, political editor, creator of the fabulous Recombobulation Area, every Tuesday with me at 5:30 in the drive time slot. Thanks so much, Dan.
Thanks so much, Maggie. Be well.
We're going to have some final thoughts, and I'll play for you Donald Trump's imaginary numbers, some magical thinking about how he's polling from a rally today in Michigan. The man has lost his marbles, if he ever had any. Keep it locked. I'm Maggie Dawn. We'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
What is up, everybody? We have reached our last segment of the day. You're going to want to stick around. We got Nightlight with Pete Schwabe coming up next. If you want to get away from some politics, talk a little pop culture, movies, and all that kind of good stuff, you're going to want to stick around. I love me some Pete Schwabe after I get done with our great discussions here. We got a couple of callers on the lines. You want to get in your last thoughts of the day on Trump's first 100 days, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Here is the fact. Donald Trump's approval ratings, or should I say disapproval ratings, his disapproval ratings are higher and his approval ratings are lower than any other president in a recent poll, and I've heard it stated this way, since we basically started doing mathematically accurate polling. So let me put it this way. His approval ratings are lower than any other president in the history of American political polling at this point in his presidency. That's the fact. He's polling worse than anybody else. But on planet Trump, this is what he says.
In 100 days, we have delivered the most profound change in Washington in nearly 100 years. I read an editorial today that this is the most consequential presidency in history. How about that? And it wasn't even by a group that would normally be supporting us. It was a group of people that I think they tend to be on the liberal side, but they said it's the most important election. November 5th,
so do we have the sound of him talking about it is the best 100-day start? Do we have that?
And we're here tonight in the heartland of our nation to celebrate the most successful first 100 days of any administration in the history of our country. And that's according to many, many people.
I mean, this is just insanity. Like, that is not true. That is just a bald-faced lie. Have you no shame at all, sir? Apparently not. And then this craziness that he also had to say today about his actual approval ratings. Let's take a listen.
Yeah. In 100 days, we have delivered the most profound change in Washington in nearly 100 years. I read a editorial today that this is the most.
Okay, not this sound either. That's all right. Here's what he said. He said they do these polls where they interview far more Democrats. I saw them over the past few days. I had them checked out. They interview far more Democrats more in the polls. They say Trump has only a 44% approval rating. If it was legit, it would be 60 or 70%. What are you even talking about? And I'm going to give some love at this moment to Brian from Milwaukee, who on the text stream, 855-752-4842, shared with us this. LeavingMAGA.org. LeavingMAGA.org is a supportive, non-judgmental community for anyone who is trying to or has left the MAGA movement or is starting to question their support for Trump and the MAGA ideals. If you've got doubts, you might be experiencing a little buyer's remorse or simply looking for a safe place to talk, you are not alone. Check out LeavingMAGA.org. I am all about it. Our good friend Tom from LA has been quite patient. Tom, thank you for hanging out with us this afternoon. What do you have to say, sir?
It's amazing, Maggie. Strong and wrong, I guess, always wins, because this guy, he takes it to another level. He just lives in his own fantasy world. But I wanted to call because, boy, a lot more people are going to be joining that website after May 20th of this year. And I would also recommend everyone check out J.B. Pritzker's speech from yesterday. Was on the Midas Touch, and I'll tell you what, I think JBP might be our next FDR along with AOC. So anyway, this is our prediction, yeah. And I'm excited.
Let me ask you this, Tom. I think Pritzker has a way of communicating that is incredibly compelling, that I think is more compelling than how Bernie Sanders' message is, and more compelling than the way Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez messages. What do you think? I just think Pritzker has a very, the way that he walks up to the issues, I think is very big tent.
Yeah, he has also, well, one, he is an actual billionaire.
Right.
So it might take an actual billionaire to beat this
a pretend billionaire. Yeah.
And might take him to beat the other side and maybe actually get money out of politics is really my hope. So we don't have to deal with this mess anymore and we restore government back to we the people. I think also what he did was he did not talk in prose. He spoke very, very clearly and succinctly the way FDR did.
Yes.
In terms of the speech that happened. And I think sometimes Bernie, who I love, but I don't think he uses the FDR type of speech the way I'm going to see J.B. Pritzker use it. And I think J.B. Pritzker just kind of does the signposting where he, you know, is saying this and then this, this and then this. So it
right.
doesn't have to be a long, drawn-out speech. It can just be bumper stickers, and what I will said is that I hope he takes that speech, and I hope he just says it and says it and says it until people are just, they know the speech inside and out, because that's what Republicans do, and I think he's very, very good at that, and I think he's really good.
Yeah, thank you, Tom from L.A. We have to message over and over and over again. We say no to billionaire overlords. We say no to more tax cuts for billionaires and 100 millionaires and the world's wealthiest corporations. We say yes to American families. We say yes to American excellence. We can have due process and safe and secure borders. I'm Maggie Dawn. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it is always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.